Hi, and welcome to this week's Three Legs, Four Wheels podcast. Just want to start with an apology for missing last week. Unfortunately, I couldn't talk. So, I'm back this week, Paul as usual, here with...
Chris.
And Lee.
And I've got a few stories to cover this week with there being a little bit of a break at the moment. And the first one being Williams. Massive financial losses, but apparently it's not an issue.
Not an issue for who?
because that's a very good question.
I'm sorry, but £43 million or dollars?
Pounds, according to the BBC.
Yeah. Right, so yeah, I mean, that's a substantial loss for anyone, any kind of any form of company, corporation. Anyone who loses £43 million is not going to be happy. It's not to say that it's not an issue means that it is an issue, basically.
Could it just be something to do with it, like a simple calendar overlap where they haven't got the TV rights money or something like that?
Well, Claire Williams said it was due to a bad showing last year and not getting the same amount of prize money that they had in previous years, and they were...
A bad showing last year? They had one of the best years they've had for ages.
Or was it the year before? It's business, so they're not. It's not real numbers, probably.
Got it. The year before, it was probably £46 million worth of like front wings.
Passed around the ladder sponsorship.
Yeah, front wings.
Before he left to go to.
Before he went to Break Lotuses.
Yeah, before he went to Break Lotuses instead. You watch 2 years' time, Lotus will put out a financial report and they will also have lost £46 billion. or however much it was.
So, Three Legs, Four Wheels business tip. Buy shares in front wings.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is worrying for Williams. I think I caught at the Bahrain GP Claire Williams saying something about Ferrari pumping $100 million extra into their program during the winter to develop the car. But $100 million extra on top of their already huge budget. And she said that $100 million is our entire budget for the year. So that's almost that $100 million, £43 million. You're looking at almost an entire yearly budget loss there. And that is massively worrying for a team of Williams' scale.
Especially considering that Williams right now, not obviously we don't know what's going to go on for the rest of the season, but they're not in the position they thought they'd be.
Second.
They're where I thought they'd be, but they're not where they thought they'd be.
Correct, yeah. I mean, even one of the major magazines put out, you know, the computer-generated image of the new Williams car. You know, is this a Merc beater? The answer is no, it's not a Merc beater, and they're not quite at the point where they thought.
It's not a Ferrari beater.
It's not a Ferrari beater, no. It's a Lotus beater.
It's definitely a Lotus
beater. And a Force India beater.
And a Red Bull
beater.
Red Bull beater. It's sometimes a Max Verstappen beater, but not all the time.
Next thing we've come across this week, Jacques Villeneuve has made a few comments. According to him, I'm not going to do the accent, Fernando Alonso will not win a race again now that he's signed for McLaren.
What's that all about?
Sorry to all our Canadian listeners.
Sorry, we do love the Canadian. But Jacques Villeneuve is a fantastic character. He always has been in and around Formula One. Never been afraid to say what he thinks,
even when what he thinks is not 100% right.
No, I know. And
I like guys that just say what they think, though.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he's an absolute legend of the sport, and he always will be. But for him to come out and say that Fernando Alonso will never win another race again, it's a very bold statement.
To be fair, he did say Fernando Alonso might not win another race.
I read it as Alonso's finished, especially when he also added that he could have stayed at Ferrari, driven around for 3 years, got the occasional win, and then retired a rich man. He's going to do that anyway.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, Fernando Alonso's never going to be poor, is he? Unless he's, you know, gone into one of those Bernie Madoff style schemes. Has shares in Williams.
You know. Well, I mean, if what you think about Alonso is to be believed with Ferrari, that Ferrari had already decided that they had that they were going to have Sebastian in the car. They knew they had Kimi there as well, which would be a good backup. So Fernando was leaving Ferrari whether he wanted to or not.
Yeah, they were.
But he couldn't have stayed there.
It was a two-way thing, really, wasn't it? Yeah. Fernando wanted to leave. The team were ready to let him go.
Yeah.
But
this is the team that paid Kimi not to drive.
Absolutely, yeah. But as far as Villeneuve's comments go, it could psychologically be devastating because this happened in MotoGP about 10 years ago now. Valentino Rossi turned around to his championship rival Sete Gibernau and said, "You will never win another race again," and he never did.
But at the time, Rossi was obviously a current rider.
Yeah.
Villeneuve isn't a current driver.
No, he's not, and he also has one less championship than Fernando Alonso. So, you know, is it sour grapes on Villeneuve's part, or is it the fact that, you know,
it's not sour grapes, I think it's just logic, isn't it? You look at...
Is it a passing comment that's been taken too far?
I think so. Well, look at the age of Fernando Alonso. I mean, you put Jenson Button in this as well, with him being like a year or so older. Unless McLaren sort the car out, right, reasonably sharp, if they end up having a terrible year all year this year, then next year, going in, it's all right, we've got things a bit better now, and, you know, there may be... They're going to be regular point scorers or something like that. If it takes them 2-3 years to get back up to winning ways, to win races and championships, then there's a very good chance that Fernando won't be there.
Yeah, I understand that, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's all Villeneuve meant by it. Yeah, you know, it's just...
Possibly.
Time's running out, and he's, I'd say, second only to Jensen, which makes it quite strange that they're in the same team now. Both of those drivers have made some horrendous team choices through their career.
Absolutely, and at the wrong times as well. Yeah. You know,
it's been... easily cost championships for both drivers.
Yeah. You know, it's... I mean, I'm looking forward to what McLaren can bring for the European season, but Eric Boullier is now saying it might not be till next year.
Every race, so they talk down the next race, don't they?
Yeah, they do. At the moment, they are talking down Barcelona, when for the whole of the beginning of the season, all of the flyaway races, they've been talking up. Yeah. Barcelona.
And now Alonso and Button have both said that in the near future, the only track that they can see them doing well at is Monaco.
Mm-hmm. Which is worrying.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's all about driver quality rather than out-and-out speed.
Yeah, yeah.
They've certainly got the driver quality for it. It's just, are they going to have the reliability in the car?
Yeah, that's another big point because, you know, a lot of manufacturers, Honda included, have lost engines at a sufficient rate this year. Not that Monaco is a particularly engine heavy track, but you probably put your weakest engine out of Monaco.
Yeah,
I would imagine, purely because, you know, you're not
Red Bull might put their only engine out.
Red Bull might have to borrow an engine from Toro Rosso or something like that, but we don't know what's going to happen there. But
well, apparently the fifth engine, it just needs ratifying. All the teams and Bernie have agreed on it now. It just needs rubber stamping so that Red Bull can go one extra race without getting a grid penalty.
And that's still not going to be enough because Red Bull, Christian Horner has said that they're probably going to need 9 engines for each driver this year. They've gone through 3 already.
How many races have we had?
4.
4.
4. So they're basically smashing an engine a race.
Pretty much. That's what Christian Horner was saying, yeah. Even if reliability improves to double, then they're still going to need about 8 or 9 engines each.
So that's 9 engines if everything goes great.
Yeah, if everything goes well.
I can't see that happening because the way that the Renault engine's been, and we've talked about it, it's been in the papers enough.
Yeah.
Christian Horner's definitely talked about it at length. It's just not there. It's not as powerful. It's not as reliable. We say this every week.
Yeah, but I mean, looking at the drivers, I mean, we've discussed them before. Is Daniel Ricciardo outperforming his car? Or is Daniel Kvyat just not as good as we thought he was?
Well, Helmut Marko says that Danny Rick is as good as Vettel.
You could argue he's better than Vettel than last year.
He certainly was last season, but Kvyat has, to me, been a disappointment.
So far, yeah, I mean, he was good at Toro Rosso, but since he stepped up to Red Bull...
There was talks last year, wasn't there, where they first announced Verstappen and Sainz for Toro Rosso.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember who said it now. It might have been Martin Brundle, but so someone said they actually thought that putting Danny Kvyat in the Red Bull was a bigger gamble
than putting Verstappen inside, and
that's turned out to be totally right. It's proven
the case so far. I mean, there's been talk and speculation on Twitter that we'll be seeing one of the Toro Rosso drivers in a Red Bull before the end of the season.
Which, I can't see it.
Which could happen. I mean, the summer break is always when things start moving. Remember when Sebastian Bourdais was hoofed out of the team? That was in the summer break, or just before the summer break, because Alguersuari came in to replace him at Toro Rosso.
Yeah.
No, Red Bull aren't the team that don't mind taking a driver out the back if it's time to get rid of him.
No.
Talking of Bourdais, watched an IndyCar race with him in it last night and he didn't crash.
Did he do fairly well?
He finished.
Well, he finished. Okay. Well done, Sebastian Bourdais, if you're listening.
Just quickly, I know we moved on because we were just talking about engines before, but it just came to mind there. When we talk about Red Bull, who've got, like, they've got a heap of cash behind them, Red Bull, just like Ferrari, McLaren and Mercedes.
Not Williams.
How do we feel about Formula One and the teams that, I mean, obviously Red Bull and McLaren not having the best of times at the minute, but the teams that have the budgets and the personnel and the capacity to win races and championships, how do we feel about them being, like, having their hands tied behind the back so Marussia can race?
Well, back to the salary cap thing from a few years ago. The whole reason that Marussia, or Virgin as they were at the time, Caterham, or one of the Lotuses as they were at the time,
Team Lotus,
and HRT came into the sport, because that was on the back of the salary cap, which then got quietly brushed under the carpet when all those three teams were racing. And how long did it take for anyone to get a point?
Absolutely. It took, was it till last year?
When took till Bian- last year
when
for
Bianchi scored that point in Monaco.
Yeah, for Gilles to get them.
Yeah, for Marussia. Yeah.
I mean, we don't want to see empty grids, but something needs to be done. I mean, when the talk of the three car team came up, to be perfectly honest, I kind of like the sound of it. I think.
Yeah.
Let the guys that can afford to race. If you can't afford to be in Formula One, you shouldn't be there.
I like the idea of making the sport more manufacturer based.
Yeah.
I do quite like the idea of giving the engine manufacturers more power rather than just being engine suppliers.
Renault need more power.
Renault need more everything.
I mean, talking of that, the new chief of VW is pro Formula One after the outgoing head honcho said that he would never take part in the sport while Bernie was in charge. But he stepped aside this last week. There's a new guy in. And could we end up seeing VW in?
Well, I think in our informal discussions, Lee, you pointed out that VW are very heavily involved with Red Bull in the World Rally Championship, amongst other sports. So, you know, is this a sort of side, have they been talking to each other sort of in across the motorsport? And is there a deal? You know, we've speculated about it before, as have many other media outlets and podcasts, as to whether or not Audi VW might come in to rescue Red Bull from Renault.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't so long ago, was it? I think after BMW left Williams, when BMW decided to leave. I'm sure back then Williams were in talks with VW about supplying Williams engines. I don't think that would happen now. But obviously the VW link to Formula One,
it goes back a long way.
Yeah, it's been there before.
But it's possibly more realistic now there's somebody in charge that doesn't hate Bernie.
I think the other thing to think as well,
And vice versa.
If VW come in, I don't think they'll come in under VW, because as you were saying before, that Audi,
it's the same group. It's Volkswagen, Lamborghini, Audi. I'm trying to think. There was a couple of others as well. Skoda, and not that I think you see the Skoda name in Formula One, but Skoda and Seat as well are all under the same umbrella. You know, Sayat have a good World Rally Championship history. They've, you know, but I don't see anything other than Volkswagen or Audi, possibly Lamborghini, being pushed into Formula One.
Yeah,
and the Lamborghini name's been there before, because there was a few Italian teams going back to the late 80s, early 90s, running customer Lamborghini engines. Was it Scuderia Italia?
Yeah, Scuderia Italia. And also, if you remember when McLaren, after Honda left McLaren all those years ago, they actually tested a Lamborghini engine and it turned out to be dump.
And they went with the Porsche one, which wasn't much better.
Yeah.
But here's the question, if Audi was to come into Formula One, given what's going on in like LMP1 at the minute, do you think they drag Toyota back with them?
I'm not sure that Toyota, you've got to remember, Toyota are the biggest, how do I say this politely? I'm not going to say it politely. Toyota are the biggest failures when it comes to throwing money at the sport, yeah, in the history of anything. They threw more money at their Formula One team than any sporting
they had the biggest budget ever had. Toyota was
They did, and they managed, you know, peanuts for the amount of money that they threw at it.
But they'd have a distinct advantage if they came back this time. They wouldn't have Mike Gascoigne.
Yeah, they could.
That's one way of putting it.
Yeah, I mean, that goes back to what I was saying about the manufacturers being more in control. I liked the days when BMW were a part owner of Sauber. I mean, I like Sauber as an independent team, don't get me wrong. But I liked it when BMW essentially had a works team. Toyota had a works team. Yeah. Renault had a works team. We spoke previous podcast about Ford and the Stewart team eventually being a Ford works team and then becoming Jaguar afterwards. It worked, it was a good formula, and anything, yeah, of course you still had your front runners, your mid runners and your back runners, but it was interchangeable throughout the season. It wasn't, this is what's happened in the first race, this is the template for the rest of the season, because things would change because the manufacturers had the power. Rather than just being purely engine suppliers and saying to independent teams, here's an engine, you have to provide the rest of the package.
Well, you have to think there's got to be more value in it for a car company to say when Renault were winning races with Fernando Alonso, there was more value in it for them to have a Renault badged car that they're like, yeah, right, we're Renault, we've built this car and it's winning Grand Prix, championships.
Yeah, I mean, they took lots of photos of Fernando Alonso, didn't they? Driving a Renault Laguna.
It was ridiculous that when Fernando Alonso won the world championship for Renault, their car sales globally went up 200%.
Yeah,
so ridiculous.
Yeah, it is a massive advert for the manufacturers, and I did like those days myself. Yeah,
but, see, I suppose the other good thing for things like Renault and Audi, maybe to a certain extent, although it is a premium car, where VW certainly, if you've got a brand like VW or Renault or Ford in Formula One winning races, I can buy a VW or I could buy a Renault, you know, so that they can sell more things. Can't buy a Ferrari, I'll never buy a Ferrari, probably won't buy an Audi
or a Mercedes you could go out and you could buy a Ford Fiesta, with you know, if you remember the Renault Clio, they had a Renault Williams Clio.
Yeah,
blue with gold wheels. It was like everybody bought one because they were brilliant looking cars. Might not have been particularly fast, but they had the Williams sticker on the back. It was done in that blue colour with the gold wheels. Everyone went, that is brilliant.
Well, Renault did it again, didn't they? When Fernando was in the car, was it? I think. They had a Renault Clio F1
edition
sport.
Yeah.
I mean, the car manufacturers these days seem to just be concerned about the film editions, talking of which, the Audi Avengers limited edition.
Yeah,
really? Yeah, I saw a TV advert for it the other night, and it's as bad as what was it, the Nissan pickup Die Hard.
They had a diehard.
There was a diehard Nissan pickup.
Okay,
that made me so sad. I think I'm impotent because I don't want my children to ever see that. That's actually just sterilised me.
I'll find the picture I took of one and put it on the website. Anyway, we digress, as we frequently do.
Yeah, I mean, sticking with engines, there's the new regulations. Thinking that that's popped up again, hasn't it? Since the Bahrain Grand Prix, we're looking at 1,000 horsepower engines for 2017.
Yeah,
they want to try and push it for 2016. Mercedes aren't having it because they're having such a great time at the moment.
Oh, you've got Bernie in the back there saying, "Oh, well, maybe we should go like to normally aspirated V8s and stuff."
Which is a backward step, and the engine manufacturers will never agree to it. Some of the engine manufacturers want to switch to the power units that they've got at the moment, but use a V8 internal combustion engine unit, so a smaller V8 with twin turbos. But it looks like the formula is going to stick with the V6 power unit, and it's going to be twin turbos, and engine manufacturers are quite confident they can get 1,000 horsepower out of a 1.6 litre engine with twin turbos. My Ford Cortina's got a 1.6 litre engine, and I have to change it to third when I go up hills.
but in fairness, if you stuck that engine that's in your Cortina in one of the McLarens at the moment, it would probably have a better qualifying time.
Yeah. I don't know about that. But yeah, it's crazy what the engine manufacturers are. It's crazy what the engine manufacturers are claiming that they can do.
How do we know they're not allowed to use the development tokens?
Yeah, this is the thing. I mean, does it wipe the board clean with a new formula? We just don't know. It's one of those things, isn't it? But there was speculation about the V6 being pulled and it going back to V8. It's not going to happen. The formula has to stay with V6 engines. Unless they go four cylinders, and I don't see them doing that.
I can't see that working. Plus, I mean, F1 has been traditionally the test bed for new technology that winds its way into road cars. It's where anti-lock braking systems started. It's where semi-automatic gearboxes, traction control. Mm-hmm. In the case of the Williams car, they're now putting wings in fridges in Sainsbury's to direct airflow to save energy.
Yeah.
The whole point of the current engine regulations and the engine formula.
McLaren Applied Technologies.
Yeah.
Who use Formula One technology to apply it in real life. A lot of it is in catering as well.
Yeah. The whole point of the engine formula at the moment is environmental concerns and noise reduction, which people want appearing in road cars, and but fuel economy.
Yeah, but not necessarily Formula One.
See, I'm one of the people that I don't bloody care about the noise.
No, I'm not bothered by it either, but I mean, it's a prototype formula, and that's what appears to be getting lost.
Yeah.
It's a prototype formula. You'll never see a Mercedes W06 on the roads.
No, you'll never
be able to go to shop and buy one. It's a prototype. They use the technology eventually trickles down to their supercars, which then trickles down into their high-end cars, which then trickles down eventually to the cars that you can go and then buy in the showroom for relatively cheap. Other manufacturers then latch onto this, create their own versions of it, and then almost every car that you buy in 5 years' time will have some version of what's being used today in Formula One on it.
Yeah, well, all you need to do is look at flappy paddle gearboxes.
Yep, kinetic energy recovery systems as well, energy saving on the brakes.
Yeah, that's starting to come through
it
now.
It is, yeah. Mm. I mean, there's a hell of a lot that's come through from Formula One, and it's just, you don't realise it. But again, to stress the point, it's a prototype formula, and I think that a lot of people who say, oh, well, it should be V8, it should be this, it should be that, because it's racing. Yes, it is racing, but there's a reason behind it.
Yeah.
It's a prototype formula.
Do you think there's a case to be made that there was too much when the new engines came out last year?
Too big a step?
No, not too big a step. It's the fact that when you, like, all your like TV channels and news articles, and Bernie Eccleston didn't do anything to help this situation at all. All that was pushed forward was with negative things. No, not like the crazy technology that's inside these engines, which is what they should have been praised for. Whereas it was, it's a bit quiet, you know. I mean, you just They weren't celebrated. They were instantly derided.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean, because I mean, it was from the very first test. Everyone was like, "Oh, these are a bit quiet. They sound like lawnmowers. They sound like tractors." So, well,
no, we'll stick a trumpet exhaust on it and try and amplify. No,
No, don't do that. No, I mean, it's always going to be the people who miss the sound of the V8s are always going to be outdone by the people who miss the sound of the V10s, who are always going to be outdone by the people who miss the sound of the V12s.
Yeah, and
it goes on and on and on. And people, you always have people say, looking backwards with rose-tinted glasses, as we did before with the manufacturer's era, looking back with rose-tinted glasses and saying, it was never as good as it was then. And yeah, it's just the way, I mean, you know, in 10 years' time, I look back on the formula as it is now, and it will have its own special place, as all the other previous eras of the sport do.
Well, as long as that Avengers Audi hasn't made me infertile, when I have children, and they have children, and their children have children, and their children have children, sooner or later, there's going to be no wheels on them, and they're going to be silent with some sort of plasma engines. So it doesn't fucking matter.
Bernie Ecclestone will still be in charge.
Yes.
Stay tuned for Wipeout F1. And now Manor are in the news again.
Yeah, they are, but positive news this time. They're going to have a new car, the 2015 spec car, ready for Belgium, if rumour is to be believed. At the moment, of course, they're using their 2014 spec car, brought up to 2015 regulations, but let's be honest, it's slower than anything else out there, and they could really do with an update.
When does Force India's B-spec car come out?
I thought they'd announced it for Europe, but I haven't seen or heard anything more on that, so I don't know whether it's Barcelona or whether it's
another. I'd have Canada mentioned.
Canada is possible, perhaps.
Wouldn't it be crazy though if Marussia, the team that shouldn't be racing, ended up having their 2015 car out before Force India?
It would be ironic, to say the least, seeing as Bob Fernley was one of the team principals, well, the only team principal, as far as we know, who vetoed Marussia's return to the sport as a Manor team. It would be hugely ironic if they ended up being ahead of Force India in the development game by getting their car out. I mean, to be fair to Force India, their car is a 2015 car, but it's not really. Kind of is and it isn't. And you know, it's positive for Manor to have to even break the news that they're having a new car out for Belgium. It might only do 8 races or 9 races, however many races it is, but it's positive news.
Yeah, I mean, it means we will have a 20-car grid, barring anything bizarre happening, for the rest of the season. And at one point, it looked like it was going to be 18.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be good to see. I mean, we have ribbed Manor in the past, but we've all got a soft spot for them, really.
We have. We like the underdogs, especially underdogs who work from a shed in Sheffield and manage to do as much as they have done. I mean, you've got to think back. You know, Manor have a huge history in Formula One. Have a huge history in motorsport, in feeder series for Formula One. They help drivers like Lewis Hamilton. I think he drove for Manor in Formula 3, I think it was.
I think it was, yeah.
And Kimi Raikkonen also came through a Manor team before he eventually became Formula 1 driver.
They are the new Minardi.
Possibly. They might be the new Minardi. Look what happened to Minardi. They got taken over by Toro Rosso, and now they're doing better than the team that were Stewart, Jaguar, whatever. So, you know, who knows what could happen in the future. But, you know, we like an underdog, and we, as being, you know, being British, we like British underdogs.
And being Yorkshire, I really do like a Yorkshire underdog.
That's it, yeah. And so best of luck to them. You know, I was a little bit questionable over their insolvency and return, but they've done it in the right manner. Sorry. And you know, they've done very well, and I'm pleased to see that they've got a new car on the horizon. But who will be driving?
Will Stevens is in for the season.
That's a good
rhyme. That's true, actually. But he's going to be a permanent fixture in the car this year. He's got the backing. He's got the ability. He's certainly got the pace. he's getting the most out of the car. One thing that has come up in the last couple of days is Guido van der Garde's manager has said manner is something that they are not interested in after they apparently approached him. But does guy at the front, ironic translation, does van der Garde have a future in Formula One? I'm saying not, just because of all the shenanigans.
Yeah, he's got about as much of a future in Formula One as Nelson Piquet Jr. had after 2008. That much of a future in Formula One. I don't think nobody's going to want to take him on. We've spoke about this in previous podcasts as to what could you do with Guido van der Garde. I mean, if Manor have approached him, that's brave on their part. To try and get some money in, because we know van der Garde has got quite a lot of backing behind him. There are other drivers out there with a lot of backing who also have, in my opinion, more ability than Guido van der Garde. Now, whether they've already been approached and it just hasn't been mentioned or not, I'm just very surprised that the van der Garde connection has been made and made public. You know, there's test drivers and reserve drivers.
Do you think it's been made public because it makes Guido seem like still a legitimate option for Formula One?
Yeah, but he's not.
It keeps his name in the press, though. It's keeping him fresh in people's minds. But has he done too much damage to his reputation? Personally, yes, I think so.
He hasn't done any favours on track, and he hasn't done any favours off track now, so...
No, that's it. And there are a lot of I've watched a lot more GP2 so far this year than I have in other years. I watched the entire weekend of it in Bahrain. It was fantastic. I watched all of the feature race, all of the sprint race. There's so much talent coming through in GP2. You've got to give the younger drivers a chance. You can't keep going back to these to all these paid drivers. And I know Manor are in trouble, or have been in trouble, and are trying to claw their way back out of it. And so paid drivers might be their only option, but you've got to look at younger drivers as well.
Yeah, I mean, there is that much talent in GP2, not least Stoffel Vandoorne.
Stoffel Vandoorne is brilliant. He was so fast at the Bahrain. I mean, it's his second season in GP2. And
I was slightly let down by Alex Lynn in that first race.
Yeah, I mean, there was quite a comedy shunt, actually, wasn't there, in the feature race at Bahrain GP2. But the
which Norman Nato apparently listens to this podcast, so hi, and you didn't cause it, we don't think.
No, not at all. Nice to see you here. If you are listening, Norman, please carry on listening and sharing our podcast. But yeah, it was GP2 is a fantastic series. It's arguably as good, if not better, individual driver performances than Formula One. Stoffel Vandoorne is, at the moment for me, the man in that sport. He is... I don't know how long McLaren can keep him back for before they have to bring him to the fore. And if it is a case of having to put him in a team further back down the grid to get him some experience, you know, in a football-style loan, then I think they should.
He'll be in, not next year, the year after. I think they're going to have another year with Alonso and Button next year, with him maybe in a different team, and then you'll see Button retire and him go up to McLaren.
Yeah,
it's a distinct possibility.
Yeah, I mean, he's
too talented to not put in a car.
Driving style very much like Jenson Button, very very smooth. Does not wear his tyres out. Doesn't appear to make rash moves or rash decisions at any point, like, you know, you might expect Lewis Hamilton or Sebastian Vettel to do. It's very smooth, and then as soon as his opportunity comes, very calmly takes it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't try and force things that aren't there. Isn't super aggressive. He's just smooth, fast, gets the job done. And I think he's really one to watch for the future. I'd like to see him in a Manor car, but whether or not that'll be this season or we'll have to wait.
I still expect Alex Lynn to put the manners on him.
Another pun.
I think he's going to win the championship this year.
Alexander Rossi as well is you know, a potential for the GP2 championship this year.
And then the Haas seat next year?
Possibly, yeah. I think the Haas seat is probably going to have to go to Alexander Rossi. I don't know of any other American driver that would be suitable for the seat, really, at Haas. Gene Haas has made it quite clear that he would like an American driver. And for me, he's the only option.
But he did say it's not a... It's not something that he would have.
No.
Unless there's someone that's suitable to go in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know of any other American drivers other than Alexander Rossi, as I just said, but looking back in the past, you've got Scott Speed, who was he went through the Red Bull program. Mm-hmm. He wasn't particularly successful in Formula 1. He struggled quite a lot. You've had you know, a lot of American drivers have historically struggled in Formula 1. But then again, you get the occasional one who does breakthrough and does brilliantly and ends up winning a world championship. But it hasn't happened for many, many years.
Mario Andretti was the last American...
I think so.
...championship winner, yeah.
And before him, Phil Hill, possibly.
Yeah.
Both brilliant drivers. Michael Andretti, less so.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is a shame, I mean, because... Formula One is a sport that is growing in America, and it would be good to see an American driver in the sport for the Americans to cheer on. But yeah, it's one of those things.
I mean, saying while we're on the subject of Formula One growing in America, just want to say hi to Rich Walker and the guys from Formula Feud.
Yeah, we've
been talking to on Twitter this week. Been chatting about the podcast and future of F1 in the States, It's good to see that there are people involved.
I mean, yeah, it's fantastic that there are people like Rich and the Formula Feud who are, you know, showing an interest stateside in Formula One. We were threatened with, I say threatened as though it was a bad thing. We were promised a second Grand Prix in America, New Jersey Grand Prix, and it never materialised. Mm. I think the was it going to be the American Grand Prix was going to be the one in New Jersey, and the United States Grand Prix was going to be the one in Texas.
Yeah.
So, but I'd like to see, you know, we've already got two in North America, one in Canada, one in Austin. I'd like to see another United States race some point. But I don't want to see Austin go because I love the circuit at Austin.
Oh, it's fantastic, absolutely fantastic circuit. Even in the lower formulas,
yeah,
it's making for some quality racing.
It is.
Just harking back to the IndyCar race that I watched last night, the Alabama circuit, that would make an excellent Formula One track.
It's too narrow.
It would need a little bit of work on it, but the contours on it, there's some fast turns, there's some really good technical undulating sections as well.
Thinking about it, for Formula One nowadays, I think it'd be downright dangerous.
Herman Tilkerize it.
Square corners and everything's a tribute to everything else.
Do you think Herman Tilke's got like exceptionally bad hay fever? Because he seems to go places and just get rid of all grass.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Herman Tilke's responsible for the modifications to the Mexico Grand Prix circuit, which has undergone heavy, or is undergoing heavy modifications for their Grand Prix towards the end of the year, but there are some interesting modifications. They got rid of the parabolica turn. Mm-hmm. They smoothed out a lot of the rougher, stranger, twisty sections. But aside, you know, would you count Mexico? Is Mexico a North American Grand Prix?
It's Central America.
Central America.
Central America.
Central America. We don't really have. We had Brazil. We still have Brazil.
We still have Brazil.
As a South American Grand Prix. But, I mean, we had Argentina as well at one point. Formula One in South America must be a huge market. You know, the Brazilian Grand Prix is always packed.
Yeah. I'm just trying to look up the Mexican circuit online, actually, which is why I'm desperately filling for time. Chris, do some talking.
That's fine. I think it's called the Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez. If I've got, I can spell it for you if you want, but the people listening won't want to hear me spelling it out.
No, that's that's probably for the best. Let's have a look. What we have is, I I can't say. Damn you, Wikipedia. Just damn you.
Damn Wikipedia.
Oh, yes. The Grand Prix circuit underwent a significant renovation under the direction of Herman Tilke.
Right, okay, so it is Herman Tilke who's redone the stadium section as it is now, rather than the giant parabolica that was there.
That would be the one. Isn't this the one where it's another one where every corner's a tribute to another corner or something?
Oh, right.
Well, it worked in America, so it might be a decent track.
It might work in Mexico.
I must admit, it doesn't look great.
It doesn't look great, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And finally, we just want to wrap things up by saying congratulations to Mick Schumacher winning his first race in Formula 4.
Yeah, he won. I think it was won the award. Definitely won the award for being the best rookie. But he's won a race in his first weekend.
Yeah, he's leading the rookie championship, and
yeah, I think he's third overall in the championship, fourth overall in the championship. Yeah. Anyway, so what a great result from his
first
weekend.
He must have pulled back sort of almost let down stakes because he was 12th in the first race,
right?
And it must be a case of Schumacher's son's it. Oh.
12th.
That's okay, he won the second race.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if he's got the force. Yeah.
The force?
Yeah, the force. I have it. My father has it.
He's got the chin.
It's Skip Ralph.
Definitely got the jaw for it.
I think the only problem with him really is he's 16. He might be a bit too old to get a Formula 1 drive now.
Yeah, he's far too past it to get a Formula 1 drive.
He'll never get a Red Bull drive.
No, he won't. No, he'll have to use Max Verstappen's ID.
I think that about wraps it up for this week, but Lee has something to say.
Yeah, before we go, as everyone else has been thanking people for stuff and stuff, I'd like to thank Sam Bird for sharing our podcast last week.
Yeah, keep plugging away, Sam.
Yeah, thanks very much. And if any other drivers or, anybody higher Formula One is listening and wants to share our podcast, please feel free and we will thank you next week.
We will be back next week. We're not sure what lineup it's going to be because Lee's off sunning himself. Well, drinking himself.
Drinking myself. It's not going to be sunny, I don't think. Germany's not going to be sunny this time of year, is it?
Well, it's not going to be a Grand Prix.
It's not going to be a Grand Prix. It's probably going to be quite cold as well.
And that's the beer. How's the temperatures over there? But, we will put another one together next week. And that'll be a preview of Spain, which we are all looking forward to.
Yeah, of course we are. Yeah, there's lots to look forward to in Spain. Barcelona always throws up some interesting points. I'm sure we'll mention Fernando Alonso again.
once or two dozen times.
But yeah, we'll see you with whatever lineup we're with next week, and at some point next week for the podcast then.
I will be here in spirit.
And we'll get a pay driver in.
Pay driver in.
Pay driver next week.
Excellent. Thanks for listening. We'll see you later.
See you soon. Bye-bye.